which he did, but anyway, we used to rag over because he's always, now he's a director of alumni, Yankee alumni. He's the one that determines who comes to the old timer games. That's why I go once every 4 years, you know, or 5 years. I go every year. Not one of these favorite people, but he used to say, how can you guys do that? And you got somebody who's not a baseball person going to negotiate for you. I said, Jim, I don't have a degree in business. I don't negotiate things. I don't know how much money they've got to offer. I'm going in and talk to a guy who knows how much money he can offer me, and if he saves any, great, that's feather in his cap. And he's negotiating his profession. This is what he does. I play baseball. I throw baseballs. Sometimes well, sometimes not well, but that's what I do. And this guy, what he does is negotiate. So you're sending an amateur in to play professional. And at that time, I thought agents were a good idea, but I never made enough money where I felt like I could afford an agent. I didn't know if I was going to. Maybe I made a lot more if I'd had an agent. But Al went forever on potential. Once you got potential, you keep playing. Downey never went as big like they thought he would, but he threw well. He had potential. As long as you got potential, you can make some money.
Yeah. Yeah. The Yankees really gave up on him in 69, and they came back and had the strong years for the Dodgers.
That's right. He really did. What an unusual young man.
Found out he had narcolepsy.
Oh, we knew. We used to rag him all the time. Before a game, he'd been here sleeping on the training table. He'd go on the train, he'd sleep, or the bus, he'd sleep everywhere, and we'd get on Al. And then, yeah, he did. And that's, you go back and see it now, you know what was wrong. I didn't know what was wrong with him at the time. We just thought, oh, he's laid back. We're getting ready to pitch in a big ball game, and he's in here on the training table, sound asleep. See, this guy can really relax.
Yeah. Yeah. He went for an arm exam at the Mayo Clinic. They found out he was narcoleptic. He said, that's why I keep falling asleep on dates.
I really liked Al. I did. He was one of the guys I really liked. I called him. We went out to the NCAA meetings this year in Anaheim. And I had his number through the Yankee alumni magazine or booklet that we get. And I called him and talked to him for a short while. Still a good guy.
Yeah, I'm going to try to see him when I get back out to the
West
Coast.
He's a nice man. He never did want to talk much to writers or about a lot of things. He's kind of a private person. Yeah. He's a good man.
Let's see.
Hasn't helped you a lot, I don't think.
Oh, I think
I don't have a lot of.
I think you.
I wish I had the vivid memories of all the people that sat across, like you're talking about, from the table, and the things that we discussed and what we did. I learned a long time ago to put a lot of things part of my nature and just drop them and go on. Unfortunately, I missed some good stuff.
Would you say, on balance, that being a player rep was a thankless task sometimes, or always rewarding?
I thought it was very rewarding. I got to be involved with some really good people in a very important time, players' rights and players' association. You know, it was at the best time. It was the very best time. It was a hard time, and I think it helped me prepare for an administrative job. And, having been involved with Marvin helped me a lot in some of the philosophy that I felt. He didn't make me a radical. I've never been a radical. I'm somewhat conservative. I think he helped me understand the process and understand that things are not always right just because that's the way they've been for hundreds of years, or 100 years, or since 1869. You know, the first pro team, the first reserve clause. But anyway. No, I thought it was a good job. I enjoyed doing it, and I had a great. I guess it was pleasing to me personally, probably ego massaging a little bit, that people would elect me to do that. And then being an American League rep was really a big weight, and I felt real good about it. And I wanted to do a good job for you.
Who are some of the other player reps who stand out in your memory?
Bunny, big time. When he became really a pension representative, which was a very important job. Brooks Robinson was good. I enjoyed being with Brooks. Pagaroni. Pag was fun. I think he was a sharp guy. Trying to think with the National League, some of the people that we worked with that I really appreciated. I can't come back with all the names right now. I guess if I looked at some of the meetings. But I see the American League guys.
All right. I had a good talk with Tom Howard.
Howard was good, which is a little bit surprising because the Giants were a bitch. you know, and he was with the Giants at that time, and they put a lot of pressure on their people, I think. And Haller, at the time, yeah, Haller was good. This was after, later on, when I got to know him.
He was with the Dodgers by 69.
Mm-hmm. Oh, was he then? Yeah. Okay. But he started with the Giants, right. I think. Yeah, okay. The Dodgers weren't bad, if I remember, as far as, you know, what they're doing. I remember the Giants have been really anti.
Is that because of Horace Stone?
Basically. Yeah. You know Herman Franks at all? Have you ever heard anything about Herman?
A little bit.
He's a little bit of a bully. He used to talk really bad about Marvin.
In fact, Miller told me about... you were a player rep that year, the Lou Krause incident.
Kansas City?
Yes. And Jack Aker was the player rep.
Jack Aker was another one. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I'm going to see him down in Tucson this winter, I believe.
Jack was a pretty good player rep.
Story that Miller told me was that after he met with Aker, and I guess he talked to Rogers, was the AL rep at that time, about filing an unfair labor practices suit, the possibility of it. The next thing he knew, he got a telegram from Haller and Randy Hundley saying, where do you get off talking about filing lawsuits, which have no authority to do this? And he said he was reading this letter, and it didn't sound like Haller and Hundley. And what had happened was that the Cubs were in San Francisco, and DeRocher and his protege, Franks, Haller, the two player reps, and brought him into an office and dictated this telegram to him.
Right. I could see them doing that.
Was there a lot of coercion like that?
I don't know. I didn't hear about a lot of it. That's I've heard of. I can believe that. The Giants were against him then.
Yeah, Haller didn't remember it, but I'll have to see him from this weekend.
I don't remember that happening. I understand a lot of the innuendo through the people saying Marvin Miller's in baseball. I mean, I heard that from several people. You guys better be careful with these guys when we're in baseball. We've got pretty good. Okay.
And it's done nothing but prosper, despite its its discord. Well, right before Miller came in, Jimmy Hoffa was talking about.
I'll tell you something else. Yeah, the Teamsters were hot to get into baseball. And when we were going to do a strike, Teamsters came and offered. They said, we'll shut them down.
What was that?
You guys will align with us. I don't know what it was, 69? I think it was 69 deal. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. Marvin said the Teamsters representative came and met with him and wanted us to be part of the Teamsters Union. And they said, if you guys join in with us, we'll shut every ballpark down in this country. All the vendors, everything. And it was kind of, you know, we sat and said, Marvin, come. I said, Marvin? It would work pretty good, wouldn't it? I said,
they're not
talking about power. Of course, we're involved with a group we didn't really want to get involved with. We decided we don't want to do that. We're kind of a pure union, in other words. Yeah, we didn't call it a union, we called it a player association, but it really was, you know, it became a union because we had a common group, a common goal. And we were not really affiliated with any other AFL-CIO teams or whatever. And there were several overtures for us to join up with other people because we had a lot more time. It'd been wild, wouldn't it?
Yes, that might have killed baseball.
Oh, it might have. That's true. Marvin convinced us, and didn't take much convincing. We weren't really excited about it. We just thought about the revenge factor would be pretty good there for a while. Might shut down everything all these guys own.
Yeah.
It could have been tough. But we decided, we don't do that.
I talked with Bob Friend. He had been persuaded to pen an article in the Sporting News in the early 60s about why players wouldn't want a union.
Oh, really?
The quote that I think Miller puts in, it's in his book, is Friend's quote. Well, what would it do to baseball fans to see Stan Musial on a picket line?
Oh, yeah, I saw that quote. Yeah, like we're going to pick it. Football players did it, didn't they?
Yeah, you know, the and the owners in that strike did what the baseball owners threatened to do in 69.
Right.
Start the season with minor leaguers.
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't have worked.
I don't think it would work in baseball. Easily did it in football. Who knows?
Right, now you do it. That's a couple more things. I keep forgetting to ask pitchers. I've meant to, and I forgot. Did lowering the mound in 69 make a big difference?
Yeah. It didn't hurt the hard throwers or the people that had good hard stuff. What it hurt was the guys that threw breaking pitches, because on flat ground, you really have to use a lot more of your body. You don't get the same drive. The steeper the mound, the higher it is, the more you just fall down. And it really bring breaking pitches down. Straight over the top guys go harder off of a steep mound. Me as a three-quarter sidearm pitcher, it didn't hurt me quite as bad as it did some of the other guys, but it really affects your curveball when you get tired, especially when you get tired when you need that other thing. And they were looking for a way to get more hitting in the game. The pitcher's head count. Every time we do something where we start getting ahead, they lower the mound, they juice up the ball, they take away, touching the mouth and lots of other things, but it affected it.
Why do you think the hitting had gone downhill in the 60s?
Pitching, good pitching will be good hitting almost all the time. I think pitching had really progressed to the point, plus the fact that we're just ahead of hitters. And tighten up the strike zone. I mean, they do a lot of things that have helped hitters. Almost every rule has been a hitter's rule. And it's also making the game very long right now, too, by doing a lot of that junk. And which is sad. It's one thing that they're going to have to address in baseball, in my opinion. I don't want to sit there 3 hours, 3.5 hours. 2.5 hours is long enough to set much ball game. It really is. When I coached up here, I make guys run to the plate, and the pitcher run off the mound. Pitcher, get the ball, throw the ball.
Yeah.
I tell the umpires, call strikes. I don't care. Call strikes. Make them swing back. Lowering the mound hurt. Did.
Yeah, one of those silly rules is this no going to your mouth on the mound. So it just gives the pitchers an excuse to go off the mound.
Right.
You can't touch your mouth, but you can wipe the sweat off your forehead.
Right.
What's the difference?
You're supposed to wipe off. Well, if you went to your mouth, you can wipe off. Nobody uses slippery elm anymore anyway. They used to. Gaylord could throw almost a dry spitter. I mean, he needed very little juice on the ball to make it do that stuff.
But he had it anyway.
He threw it all the time. Dick Deese told me, he called him a no-hitter. 1 year, Dick and I lived in apartments complex together in Santa Clara, so we rode back and forth to the ballpark. He said he threw 127 pitches or something, 123 of them spitters. Threw a couple sliders,
But, I talked to Russ Gibson, and he said...
Russ was out there, and he was a catcher, too.
Yeah, he said Perry had by far the best juice on the ball.
He did, and he didn't need much. I mean, he's the only guy I ever saw could load up, then go to the rosin bag, put rosin on his hand, and it still goes better. Most people can't do that. Whitey Ford threw the mud balls and the scraped up balls and this sort of thing, but he didn't throw spitters. I threw one in my lifetime. And I threw it to Dennis Menke. I was playing for Salt Lake City, Pacific Coast League, and he was a banker. And he had a line drive to center field on the ropes. And I thought God was striking me dead right now. I've cheated in baseball. I put Vaseline on the ball, man. I had to put a gob of it on there to even get it to even look like anything. And I threw it in the end line drive, and said, that's it. That's
cured
my sole experience with spitter. Oh, bad news.
Well, I think that's about all the 57 questions.
That's okay. I didn't know how long you'd want to talk. Or
I didn't either. I thought it would be a couple hours, and it has been.
Yeah.
A little more than that, even.
Yeah, it's a tough trip driving all the way down here, and that's why I wish I had a lot more, had a better memory about a lot of these things.
Anything else you want to throw in while you got
here? I tell you what, you covered a lot of things. It's quite a scary thing, and I think the biggest thing you've already hit on with the boss situation, the scariest thing we had to deal with was going against people that most of us have played at that time, 3 and 4, maybe 5 years in minor leagues, trying to get to the big leagues. And it was like an unattainable goal. This was the Mecca when we got there, and to fuss at those people, who brought us up there was totally foreign to any kind of training we'd ever had, and that was the hardest thing I think to do.
What interests me about it is that spring training comes around, and you all want to get out there and get in shape and get the edge on the guys who are trying to beat out for jobs, and Here, Marvin Miller comes along and says, oh, don't sign a contract, don't go to spring training, don't work out or give them any indication that you're itching to play.
Right.
And here it all comes to a head.
Right. I mean, we're tired of sitting home with our wives at that time. We want to get away from our wives and children for a while, you know, and be kids again. Yeah, that was hard. Yeah, that thing about a lot of people want to work out as a group, you know, as a team. Yeah, the owners look at that and say, hey, we can hold them out tomorrow. They're going to be in shape. Don't get in shape. I work out here in the cold. Well, I appreciate you coming.
Well, I just
I really do. And I hope it helps in some way. I hope.